Good morning. It being 8:30, I'm calling this meeting of the House Early Childhood Finance and Policy Committee to order. I'm Representative Dave Pinto, the chair of the committee, and this meeting is being held pursuant to House Rule 10.01, which allows for virtual hearings of this type. I want to direct the attention of members of the public who are watching this to our committee website, where you will find the agenda and meeting materials, et cetera. So you can check that out. With that, we're going to begin as usual by having the clerk take the roll. And Mr. Dozen, we'll have to have you on mute if you're there you go.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Representative Pinto, chair.
Present.
Representative Pryor, chair. Vice chair, excuse me.
Yep, that's okay. I liked it. Okay.
There we go.
Pryor, present.
Representative Franzen.
Present.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bolden.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Devine.
Daphne present.
Daphne, excuse me. Representative Damath.
Damath present.
Representative Juergens.
Juergens present.
Representative Kaltiza Watum.
Present.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison present.
Representative Wazowick.
Present.
And Representative Wolgamott.
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dozlin, and thank you all for being here. And so we need to have our minutes approved from our first meeting of this session on Tuesday. And so, Representative Pryor, I'll ask if you can move approval of the minutes of the meeting of February 1st.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. And any additions or corrections to our minutes? And not hearing anyone, all in favor of approval of the February 1st minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so the minutes are approved. Motion passes. And so, members, we're continuing today with the process we started on Tuesday, where we are hearing from state agencies about some of the provisions that passed in our budget from last spring. I think it was actually in late June by the time that all came together. And so in most cases, these are provisions that passed through our committee and our committee budget. In a few cases, they did not, but they relate directly to our work. And so you'll kind of remember the pattern that we're being reminded about what passed, but then getting an update about where things stand. It seems like a good way to start start the session here. On Tuesday, we heard from Department of Human Services, the Children and Family Services Division, which deals with a number of issues relating to child care. Today, we're going to hear further from DHS. The licensing area relates a lot to regulation of childcare, among other issues. We're going to be hearing from our Department of Education, the Department of Management and Budget, our Children's Cabinet, and then from MEDEED, from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I think the reason that I say that, of course, you can all see the agenda, but I guess I want to just note once again how we really are at the intersection of a number of agencies. We're not going to hear from the Department of Health today, but you'll recall that there was some discussion from House Research on Tuesday about home visiting programs and a number of provisions relating to healthy births. And so we're really at the intersection of a number of areas. So in any case, I'm just going to see if folks have questions at all. Of course, as always, raise hands. But if not, I'd like to call up our team from DHS then. I believe we're starting with Chris Zempel. And so, Mr. Zempel, if you can introduce yourself and then get us kicked off.
Thank you and good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Chris Zempel, Legislative Director for Operations at DHS. And before my colleagues from the licensing division get into their presentation, I want to give you a quick update on the status of the ombudsperson for childcare. Right now, the governor is in the final stages of the selection process for this important position, and we are expecting an appointment in the coming weeks. If you remember, this was included in the package of changes that passed last session. Like I said, we expect an announcement very soon. Mr. Chair, if there's no questions on that, I'd like to pass it off to Alyssa Dotson.
And maybe, Mr. Zempel, I'll just note regarding the ombudsperson provision to remind members that came out of the, I believe anyway, that it came out of the task force for family child care that, as we noted, was chaired by Representative Wasilewicz, and Representative Damuth participated in that. I know has really worked on that issue as well. So just to kind of remind everyone where that stands. Let's move on then to Ms. Dodson. If you can please introduce yourself and then get going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good morning, committee members. I believe we have a presentation we're going to share here, and I'll do an introduction of myself while we're getting that queued up here. But my name is Alyssa Dodson, and I am the Deputy Inspector General for the Licensing Division. I'm going to cover some updates on some of the initiatives that did pass last session and mostly came out of the Family Child Care Task Force recommendations, and then I will pass off to one of my colleagues to talk about some of the regulation modernization here as well. There we go. Our slides are coming up here. Okay, so you can go to the next slide here. So the first item that I'm going to cover here was the requirement that we develop an orientation for family child care applicants. This is to be completed by July 1st, and this will cover basic information about licensing requirements to assist applicants through the process. To start this, what we have done so far is we sent out a survey to family child care providers and to county licensors to collect input on the orientation questions and needs. We had a great response with over 1,600 providers and nearly 100 licensors who did respond to that. We also hosted 3 webinars for providers and 1 for licensors to collect additional input as well. We're now compiling all of that information into a user-friendly and plain language format. It will likely be a PowerPoint presentation with a voiceover recording that's available on demand. This will be used as a supplemental resource for applicants, but it's not a mandate. Additionally, it doesn't replace any resources that DHS or county licensing agencies may already be using to assist applicants through there, but will be an additional resource for applicants to help understand the process. Next slide. Also, that goes into effect on July 1st of this year is an expansion to our special family child care license. The special family child care is when a program is located somewhere other than in the license holder's home, including a non-residential setting. The changes that will go into effect on July 1st will allow more flexibility by allowing up to 4 special family child care licenses to 1 organization at the same location or under the same roof. If the organization is the license holder, then they would need to designate a primary provider of care for each of those programs. This would be the individual that was in charge of the day-to-day operations of the program. We've seen significant interest in this model and currently are fielding a lot of questions, which is helping us to draft guidance and clarify some of those commonly asked questions. We're working on updating our licensing forms to reflect these changes, and then we'll provide training on the new forms and the changes to our county licensors and also guidance to the new applicants as well for this program.
Hey, Ms. Dodson, I'm a little bit confused about a couple of basic points, and I suspect that I and maybe others will appreciate this too. Can you just remind us like an example of a special family child care license that an organization, you know, you said it's where it's not in the license holder's home, just the, like, so where might it be, if you can give an example of that? And then also just remind me whether that, whether this is I believe this existed previously, but this, what we passed allowed there to be a larger number of licenses issued to an organization. If you can just clarify that.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this did expand. It used to be, I believe, 2 licenses, and we've expanded it to 4 with this language. This would be something like an organization, like a church organization that wanted to have family child care programs under 1 roof. Each of the programs need to operate separately and have, that's where that primary provider of care would be the person in charge of day-to-day operations at each of those separate programs. So they're kind of individual licenses under 1 roof, but an organization can coordinate that and be the overall license holder of that program then. So a church would be a good example of something like that.
Okay. And the advantage of a family child care doing that as opposed to child care center is that it's going to be a simpler sort of regulatory model to go with. Is that the advantage there?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. Good. Okay. Thanks. Yeah. And of course, members, feel free to raise your hands and ask your own questions. But I appreciate Ms. Dodson. You're doing that. I don't see any hands, so please continue.
Okay. I think we can go on to the next slide here. Another initiative that we are undertaking is the building out our website to include frequently asked questions for family child care providers. Right now, we're compiling this information and trying to understand what those frequently asked questions are through the calls and emails that we get on our triage lines and through the webinars that we have hosted with providers. We're compiling that information to come up with what some of those frequently asked questions are. A lot of the questions we do receive are very specific to a situation or a provider, so they're not broadly applicable. So we're trying to pull out some themes and common areas of that to provide some guidance on this website. Right now, we are working with our webpage experts and our communication staff to figure out the best way to display this on the website so it will be an easy, user-friendly format. We will likely start with just a basic framework and then build upon it to make it more robust as time allows and as we continue to get more feedback and more questions that come through. And then our alternative licensing, our alternative childcare licensing models. This is a project that we are undertaking to explore what models of childcare might exist in other states and are not allowed in our current state statute. This will be undertaken with a facilitator who will explore this, these opportunities or these what exists in other states with a group of stakeholders, including counties and providers. It will culminate in recommendations to the legislature on January 1st, 2023. We issued an RFP for a facilitator for this project. We've reviewed all of the responses and have chosen a respondent. We're in the very final stages right now of executing that contract with the respondent, and as soon as that is finalized, we'll be able to announce who that is. But we do expect that that will be imminent and that the work for this project will start this month. And with that, I'm going to pass this next section off to my colleague, Larry Hosh. So,
okay, Mr. Hosh, glad to have you here, and please introduce yourself and proceed. Let's see if we can. You may need to unmute if you're. Let's see, up there we go. Oh, no. I'm not able to hear you, but I don't know if others. I don't know if others can.
Oh, I can't hear him either.
Okay. We'll see if we can get.
I don't able to hear him either.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Borgman. So Mr. and Mr. Hosh can hear us. Oh, he can. Okay. So, and we are not able to hear you for some reason, Mr. Hosh. Still can't.
Mr. Chair, I can jump in and take over if his audio is not working.
Yeah. Well, why don't we do? Why don't we do that? Yeah. And then certainly, if we're able to, he can jump back in. But yeah, Ms. Dodson, please continue.
Okay. So the other pretty big initiative that we are undergoing right now, which is exciting work, is the child care modernization projects. In 2021, the legislature did allocate some funding to support these projects for both family child care and for child care centers. This came out of the Family Child Care Task Force recommendations as well. These modernization projects are going to support the development of new licensing standards, including a risk based tiered violation system. That's a mouthful, but kind of going through the violations and basing them on the risk of health and safety violations and things like that. It will also include the abbreviated inspections based on the new licensing standards and those risk based violation systems. Next slide. So we have engaged in a contract with NARA, which is the National Association of Regulatory Agencies. In this contract, then, NARA will partner with DHS to implement a pretty robust stakeholder engagement process. It will solicit input from parents, from providers, from county licensors, staff at DHS, and really a lot of experts in child development as well, to really explore how can we modernize these rules. And what is exists out there that's not in our state and how we can include some of these risk-based tier violations and abbreviated inspections into our rules. We will want to engage in some pilot projects to work through some of these technical or policy issues to make final kind of tweaks to it before final implementation. We do have a policy bill this year that we would like to go through that is authorizing these pilot projects as well that we are working for, which is an important piece of as we work through what these modernization standards might be, and then working through kind of testing them out through these pilot projects and making sure that we've kind of caught all those little technical changes and things like that. So NARA will work closely with DHS to put together a report with this proposed legislation and include what those new licensing models or new licensing standards are. This report will be submitted to the legislature on February 1st, 2024. It will include these new licensing standards, the risk-based violation systems, and abbreviated inspections. So currently where we're at with that is that we are working through a contract with NARA and then hiring a couple temporary policy analysts to help us work through what the stakeholder engagement will be and just kind of this robust process with that.
Okay. We have a question from Representative Pryor, and please, Representative Pryor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just start with a comment that this was really exciting to hear about this modernization, because this is, I know this is a major initiative and it's something that's long overdue. And I know that there's a lot of stakeholders in this process that really wanted to see this happen and are really going to be watching it carefully. You mentioned briefly, I mean, you're at the beginning of the process in writing the contract. But just a few more comments about, at least now initially, how you're going to, the stakeholder engagement, talking to providers all over the states, you know, especially our communities that maybe have not been involved before, and to get feedback for them and how the contract will be written to reflect that. If you could just make a few more comments if you know any more. Thank you.
Ms. Dodson.
Thank you. I believe those details are still being worked out with NARA right now and how that stakeholder engagement would look at, but we are looking at multiple ways to engage stakeholders through whether it be kind of focus groups or surveys or things like that, trying to make sure that we can get kind of a comprehensive stakeholder engagement in there and include a lot of those stakeholders who don't you know, typically respond to things or might have off hours that they're working, finding ways to make sure that we can engage all of the important individuals in this work. But I believe the final details of what that engagement will look like are still being kind of worked out with NARA right now.
And I see Mr. Hush is unmuted. Yeah, and the, please, if we can, if you wanted to add something.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, there you go. Yes, I can hear you. Yes, excellent.
And thank you for the question. Stakeholder engagement for this project is one of our primary considerations for moving forward. For example, with the revised standards, we anticipate having up to three different versions of revised standards before we move to a final recommendation. And the same is going to happen with the risk-based weighted risk assessment system. We anticipate we're going to have several versions as we go throughout the process, engaging stakeholders, implementing pilot projects, and then taking what we've learned and bring back to stakeholders before final recommendations.
And Mr. Osher, if you can please just identify your title since we had not, since this is first we're here from you.
Apparently, I was the only one that heard my introduction. So I'm Larry Hosh, manager of the Policy, Legislation, and Stakeholder Engagement Unit.
Thanks so much. Looks like nothing further from Representative Pryor, and so Ms. Dodson, please continue.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Hosh, I'm not sure who that is.
I think this concludes our portion of the updates here.
Okay. I wanted to, we'll leave this up for a second because I did want to highlight for members that there is, I know that there's a lot of interest in making sure that, as there should be, the regulations on early care and learning, child care and early learning are as effective as possible. And so we'll just want to keep in mind that even as we may consider particular changes, that there is this process going on, which I think is, as Rosa Pryor said, is quite exciting. I think that in some cases, the regulations have been in place, sort of the overall scheme since the early 1980s. And of course, we know a lot more since then. So I'm really glad this is happening. Mr. Zempel, before we move to the next section, I did want to ask you to comment. On Tuesday, Representative Damath had noted just the length of time. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a provision that had passed in June, and then even now we're still trying to put that in place. And I just have noticed as I'm looking at a number of these slides that, you know, similarly, items passed in June, we're still trying to get contracts in place. Can you just comment on kind of the process and why it might take so long to get some of these things going, given the number of months since it passed in the legislature? Yeah, thanks for bringing this back up. Mr. Zempel.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. Chris Zempel at DHS again. So things passed in June, effective dates, I believe on that, for our contracting starting July 1st, but the process we have to do, an RFP has to go through our attorneys and our contracting staff at the agency. This is a part of the agency, and members, if you've seen the governor's budget, we've actually asked for additional staff to help us with our contracting and grant making processes at the agency, because with all of the great new things from last session and the response to COVID, we are actually we've been behind on getting that up and running. But I can share on this process, we are in the final stages as well. And so I anticipate having something more to share with the committee very soon.
It's my understanding, Mr. Zempel, that we sent all these projects in the direction of the department. And of course, funding and match the projects, but we did not expand the number of folks in that kind of contracting area. So it's almost like you have a snake that was accustomed to eating a certain amount of food, and now suddenly we get this giant meal because there's just a lot of projects that's seeing the presentations, and not just in our area, many others. And so it just takes the snake that much longer to process the meal, which is part of the reason it's just taking a long time to make its way through the snake, because there was not an expansion of the staff to actually kind of do the compliance and everything to put that in place, which of course we want to make sure that we do. Is that an accurate metaphor? Can you just comment on that?
Mr. Chair, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's exactly what's happening at the agency. If we don't have more staff to do the work, the only thing we can add is time onto the process. And so unfortunately that's where we're at. But again, I think on this one, we'll have something more to share very soon.
And I'll just note one final comment on this, and of course, members, please feel free to raise hands for questions or comments or anything. The one other note that I'll make is just that when we passed a number of these things in June and then set dates for when reports were due back, I think it probably was with the assumption that things would be happening more quickly than they are, because we hadn't been taking the contracting issues into account. We'll all just have to keep an eye on being able to hopefully catch up on the work in the second half of things, so to speak, so we can get those reports back by each of those deadlines. But I know you all are working on this just as hard as you can. So thank you very much for that. I'm not seeing other hands up, and so we'll move to Ms. Brom. So members, we've been hearing from the licensing portion of DHS, and then finally we're going to hear from the Community Supports Administration. There's one piece that's in their area. So Ms. Brom, please introduce yourself and then share with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Christy Graham, and I'm with the Department of Human Services, and I think someone is going to be pulling up a slide in just a minute, so I will hold while that's happening, and here it comes. Great. Thanks. So last session, the legislature authorized funding for an inclusive child care grant program. As many of you probably recall, the goal of this grant is really to help support families who have children with disabilities and complex medical needs to better access integrated childcare options where their kids can really interact with others, including children without disabilities. I think the committee probably recalls some really powerful stories from advocates and parents both in 2020 and 2021 on this particular initiative. So we're really excited to see that it was authorized in the budget last year. The legislation required the funding to flow through counties or tribes to childcare providers. To help them really support, get the support that they need to serve children with disabilities. So the funding can be used for things like environmental modifications, staff training, teacher training, services to support kids, things like personal care assistance, nursing services in childcare facilities, behavioral health supports and things like that, the same kinds of services that you'd see kids accessing in schools and in other community settings. So the grant was funded through our Home and Community-Based Services Enhanced AFMAP dollars, and those have some pretty specific requirements around how we can use those dollars. So in order to begin spending the funds, DHS needed to get CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, approval on our what's called an initial state spending plan. And so we submitted that spending plan early July, almost immediately following special session when all of those dollars were allocated by the legislature. And CMS responded with some questions in late September on this particular proposal, as well as a few others. And we received final conditional approval from CMS just about a week ago on January 24th. So we really haven't been able to do a whole lot on implementation on this particular initiative, but staff have been working in the background, interviewing contractors for the project management and evaluation aspects of this grant. And they are working right now to set up stakeholder engagement discussions so we can share the RFP draft and really hear how things are going on the ground and get some feedback from them on how to finalize that RFP. So the goal is to finalize the RFP as quickly as possible in the next couple of months here and hopefully to issue the grants by early this summer. And so that's the update on the Inclusive Child Care Grant, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Ms. Grom. This is a provision advanced by Representative Wazlowick, as I recall. I am not seeing any hands, and we very much appreciate the update on it. So I think that we are all set for you and for Department of Human Services. Many thanks to you all for your work. We know that we sent a lot of work your way. I do see that Representative Wazlowick does have her hand up, and so we'll call on her, Representative Wazlowick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if Ms. Grom has this information yet or if this will be part of the stakeholder engagement process, but I know one of the things we talked about when we talked about this grant program was sort of some of the difficulties that providers face in providing child care for kids with disabilities and medical complexities. Do you have any sense of what the biggest barriers are right now to providers providing that care, or is that something that will be part of that process that's coming up?
Ms. Grom.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's a great question. You know, I don't have many specifics. I haven't met directly with the child care providers, but I know our staff have and are planning to do more of that. So I can probably follow up with more details on what they're identifying right now. I'm sure it's sort of a changing landscape with COVID, and everything is evolving. So I'm happy to get back to you with more information. We do have I can't remember if it's quarterly, but there are reporting requirements for the child care providers, so we'll be able to get data on how this is going in real time, and then we have a report to the legislature in February of 2023, but I suspect we'll be able to get you more information ahead of that report.
Okay, Representative Wazlowick, anything further?
No, that would be great to get that, so thank you.
Okay, good, thank you. And again, thanks to the DHS team. I think some really exciting initiatives, and we really appreciate you working through them. And again, there may need to be some hustle because of the challenges of setting up the contracts in the first place. We know that you're going to focus on that, and that's great. So we next are going to hear from our Department of Education. We have Ms. Burnham here, I believe, Assistant Commissioner Burnham. Are you an assistant or a deputy commissioner?
Hi, good morning. Assistant.
Assistant commissioner. Okay, well, always glad to have you with us, Commissioner Burnham, and please proceed. I guess you've introduced yourself, and please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and good morning, committee members. Thank you for having us this morning. We are going to give a brief update on the activities from last year that occurred with some of the COVID relief funding. And I've also included some programmatic slides at the end of this deck to serve as just general updates that we probably won't get to this morning. But I wanted to be sure that we looked back at last session and talked about some federal fund investments. So with that, we will start with the voluntary pre-K. As you know, there's just under $40 million invested to prevent the elimination of the 4,000 seats that were due to sunset. So these numbers on this slide reflect the school year of 1920. And we are in the process of gathering the data for this past school year. The data was in last month, so our fiscal department is just pulling together those numbers. We do expect a reduction in enrollment from last year, mainly simply due to the pandemic, but the majority of the seats were still used. And just a reminder that both these programs offer 350 instructional hours. Next slide. And then, as you know, last year, there was screen time legislation that was passed that will go into effect July of 2022. And the intent of that legislation is for preschool and kindergarten students not to use individual screens without the engagement of a teacher or other students, except for those students with IEPs. So what we have been doing to prepare for the implementation of this legislation is really start building awareness by communicating with superintendents and our early learning community. We've been meeting with internal and external partners to determine the best ways to support teachers and staff. We've drafted some screen time guidance and, of course, are gathering stakeholder feedback on the guidance and will likely offer PD sessions on this screen time legislation this spring. Next slide.
And Ms. Burnham, I'm just going to just clarify for folks, because I'm not necessarily from this world, that PD is professional development.
Yes, I'm sorry.
No problem. As a prosecutor, my head went to police department, which would not make a lot of sense. So that is good to get that clarified. And please continue. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. So with the $3.5 million that we received federally for our work with the early childhood special education, the funds were available to obligate by Part C lead agencies between July 1 of 2021 and September 30 of 23, and must be liquidated by January of 24. The application process and use of funds was due to the Federal Department of Special Ed this past August. And through stakeholder engagement, the following buckets for funding for distribution were identified. And those included Family Voice, Family Outcome Survey, funding districts through subgranting, statewide professional development and ongoing support, and continuation of support for Help Me Grow, the overall referral process, and the Child Find and Outreach activities. Next slide. Then some individual grant programs, one being the Reach Out and Read program, was granted $150,000 in ARP funds. And the Reach Out and Read program partners with medical professionals to provide children with developmentally appropriate books and gives parents guidance when they come and do their well child visits to the clinic, and really is a program that focuses on those early literacy skills and encourages parents and gives them some tools to work with their children in early literacy at home. So the funding is being used to expand clinic base as well as maintain levels of high program quality at new and existing programs. The Parent Child Plus program not only was granted some state funds, but also additional ARP funds. And again, the Parent Child Plus program is a literacy focused program. It is free and includes intensive home visiting for families with children between the ages of 2 and 4, and provides an evidence-based and research-validated early childhood literacy and school readiness program. This, with the expansion in funds, Parent Child Plus is working to provide programming during the pandemic and maintain program quality, as well as adding a parent-child family child care component to the model, which, as we all know, is just really exciting. And so it will provide comparable service to family child care providers and allow broader community reach. Next slide, please. In additional ARP state fiscal recovery funds, 3.5 was awarded to continue funding the 8 education partnership coalitions in the summer and fall of 2021. Those coalition members includes Austin Aspires, Rochester's Cradle to Career, Every Hand Joined in Red Wing, Northfield Promise, United Way of Central Minnesota in the St. Cloud area, Generation Next in Northside Achievement Zone, and St. Paul Promise Neighborhoods here in the metro. The RFP, we currently have an RFP out to fund 5 additional education partnership coalitions at $100,000 each. And these tasks are, or these programs are tasked with coordinating at the local level how to achieve the following goals, which are very closely aligned to our world's best workforce goals. Next slide. Then we had some GEAR funding that went out to serve additional children with priority status on the Early Learning Scholarship waitlist in April of 21. Last summer, we had a $20 million summer preschool program that to date served over 5,000 4- and 5-year-olds who will be entering kindergarten, who entered kindergarten, and whose preschool or kindergarten experience, of course, was disrupted through COVID. And though that summer or that program will roll unused funding into this summer as well. And the reason there was some unused funding in that particular program was simply because of staffing and the timing to get the programs up and running. So we're currently working with those programs who were granted that funding to get their summer planning already moving forward. And then there is additional GEAR money awarded to certified school age children in public schools for those school age care programs for K through 6.
And Commissioner, I'll just confirm for members that each of these acronyms is referring to a federal fund. As I recall, GEAR is Governor's Emergency Education Relief, perhaps, and I think we're all familiar with ARP, American Rescue Plan. So just sort of, but each of those is a federal program, as I recall. So just making sure we're all clear on that.
Yes, Chair Pinto, thank you.
Good. Yeah, please continue.
And
actually, let me just be sorry, one other pause, as long as we've been talking about what's just passed, to give a couple shout outs to members who've led on those bills that you mentioned, the screen time provision, and that was Representative Morrison's, and then Reach Out and Read. I know Representative Patiza Batoon had authored that and pushed that. And a big shout out to Chair Dabney and to Representative Pryor, who I know for several of the pieces that you identified along the way here, we're pushing quite hard in negotiations with the Senate. I'm really grateful to the department for the decision to fund a number of those programs, Reach Out and Read, Parent Child Plus, et cetera. So just want to kind of highlight the efforts of members of this committee on the provisions you've just talked about. But yeah, please continue with the program updates.
Well, thank you, Chair Pinto. Actually, that is all the updates we had. We had some additional program update slides if you'd like me to continue. I'm not sure what the timing is, but we too are appreciative of the efforts of you and your committee around promoting and pushing great programs for our early learners.
Yeah, no, I think we should be good on time. Please, give us some of these updates, and then we'll continue on from there.
Thank you, Chair. So just some updates with our early childhood special ed team. They are in the process of kind of an intensive campaign to focus on gathering voice from parents that have been engaged in our programs and services, as well as those who have not. So the intent is to better understand the caregiver experience with our early intervention system so that we can identify supports training processes as to ensure equity in access and high quality family engagement. So we have another five-year plan that is being developed and will be due soon here to the Fed. So just a really shout out to that team who did extensive stakeholder engagement and are really listening to the needs of the families and the communities. Next slide. Just a quick update with Head Start and Early Head Start. We meet with executive director on a regular basis, and you know, as with all programs who have been challenged by the pandemic, just really experiencing some pretty significant staff shortages in Head Start, as well as there's a new federal Head Start performance standard regarding vaccination that requires vaccination against COVID for all staff, contractors, and volunteers working directly with children, and that went into compliance just at the end of January. So just in speaking with the executive director yesterday, they are waiting for some rulings to come down at the federal level, because there's kind of a 50-50 split. 25 states are following the regulations, and 25 states are not, and are petitioning for the federal department to come down with a different ruling. So we're staying closely engaged with our partners in Head Start to support them in their staffing challenges as the pandemic continues to affect those programs.
Commissioner, we do have a question, though. If you're you can finish the slide. I'm not quite sure if you're done with the slide or not, but otherwise I'll go to the question.
Yes, go ahead, Chair Pinto. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, Representative Katisa Witun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Burnham, for these updates. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to make a connection between the community engagement that you were just talking about on the previous slide with then the early childhood special education, and then the report that we have requested for participation in with students, children who are in the foster care system. And oftentimes there's an overlap, certainly with those children and then the need for special education services. So I know that the department is working closely with DHS as well. And just wanted to make that connect in my own head, I suppose. If you have anything else to share, I'd appreciate it. But otherwise, we'll wait for the report.
Commissioner, yes. Comments on that?
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Yes, Representative, that's a great point. And we have been really working closely with DHS and the foster care community to make sure we are inclusive of their needs as well in all of our work.
Thank you.
Good.
So much.
And thank you, Representative Katisa Witun. Commissioner, as you know, I've got a great interest in where we have different programs and different agencies and the coordination between them. But it sounds like you are very much in touch with DHS on that foster care report and collaborating together, as I gather. Anything further to share on that, or?
Not at this time, Chair Pinto.
Okay. Yeah. Please, I don't see other hands. And so please continue.
Thank you. So just
hold on. Sorry, Commissioner. I'm so sorry. Representative Franson just has her hand up. So Representative Franson, please. We may need to have you on mute if you're
Mr. Chair.
Got it.
So, Ms. Burnham, thank you. You know, I did speak to a number of Head Start teachers over the interim. And the vaccination was probably the number one. I was getting my nails done, not that you really care, but anyway, I was having this conversation where most women will have these conversations where they're just sitting there, right? And she's a Head Start teacher, loves her job, and the vaccination itself was very problematic, and she was weighing whether or not she was going to quit the job that she loves or take the liability-free product in order to keep her job. What is the department doing? Are you guys accepting Religious exemptions, medical exemptions are very, very rare, hard to get. But the religious exemption, is the department accepting those religious exemptions? Because just many of the workers do not want to take a product where they assume all the liability in case of an adverse reaction. They are left on their own with no recourse. Could you just walk us through how that is going? And personally, I hope that it is tossed out like the other mandates are tossed out. And so I'm hoping for that to take place. But until then, could you just walk us through that?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Franzen, as you know, all the Head Start regulations come down from the federal Head Start agency. So we as a state cannot, we don't have a lot of say in those federal regulations. And I would need to get back with the executive director of Head Start to confirm if they are offering any sort of exemptions. That has not been part of our conversations the last couple weeks. But I'm happy to get back with Craig and confirm your question around if they are offering any exemptions in that federal regulation.
Okay. Representative Franzen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Burnham. I think that's really important. We were seeing a crisis all over in every industry, right? But then you add a mandate to it, and people can go to other positions where that mandate is not there. So I feel that we're already in a workforce shortage in the early childhood education field, including Head Start. And so to see a further issue in that is kind of problematic.
Thank you, Representative Franzen. And I might ask, Commissioner, that when you get that information, and please do, about the religious exemptions, I'd be interested, maybe you know the answer to this, but does the mandate permit people to do the alternative path where you do the regular testing? You know, sometimes these mandates say, you know, you either have to be vaccinated or else you have to, you know, submit regular tests. And I guess I'm just sort of curious, is that a path that would even be available to somebody? Not to say, that would be something somebody would choose, but I'd just be interested to get that set of that information. Commissioner, are you aware of that?
I would need to confirm that, Chair Pinto.
Yeah, I doesn't surprise me. Yeah, so if you could please get that information for us in response to Representative Franzen's question in mind. Representative Franzen, let's see if something else is hand down. Okay, yeah, if you could please get us that information, that'd be great. Not seeing other hands, so Commissioner, please continue.
Sure, thank you, Chair. So just a quick update on the work being done with early childhood family education and school readiness. Again, the pandemic has caused some staffing issues and attendance issues in those programs as well. And of course, in all programs, it's not only finding the staff, but keeping the staff and keeping the staff healthy and supported in these programs as well. And just an update on every ECFE program, of course, completes the community needs assessment. And the last round of that, responding to family needs continued to be one of the top themes, as well as innovative and responsive programming, more partnering, and just overall supporting families during this pandemic. Then we have health and developmental screening. Due to the pandemic, we had a decrease in numbers caused by probably most likely the backlog of screenings due to COVID-19 and the need to prioritize students who needed screening as a requirement of attending kindergarten and pre-K programs, as well as a parental preference to delay screening for children not yet eligible for COVID vaccinations. And then kindergarten entry profile, not much of an update here. We still continue to be challenged by districts not volunteering to participate in this kindergarten entry program. However, we do continue to use these dollars to support the impact assessment that we are collecting through our voluntary pre-K programming in school readiness plus programs. They are required to use a KEP assessment tool. And so we are working with those programs to collect impact data.
Commissioner, can I ask about your first bullet? Are you saying that districts sort of that the participation in the KEP has dropped to zero, essentially, that no district, or you just mean that a smaller number, or what is, can you just expand on that first bullet?
So traditionally, as the current language in the kindergarten entry assessment is for schools to participate on a voluntary basis. And so we simply do not have districts who are offering to volunteer to do a kindergarten entry assessment. And that's the assessment done in the first 8 to 10 weeks of the kindergarten year. So what we've done because of that is kind of transitioned our focus to collecting better data with our pre-K students in the pre-K programming and have included some language in that statute around a requirement that they have to submit impact data to us. So we can measure the impact of offering pre-K and school readiness plus. So the tools are the same, and we have created a data collection system or developed a data collection system at MDE for those pre-K programs to submit data. And then we can turn around and offer them some analysis of that data that actually informs instruction on a regular basis. So We're focusing on what we can do and can support schools with in this program.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have a question, Representative Gameth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Burnham. Just two questions on the kindergarten entry profile. Understanding that it is voluntary, my first part of the question is what, because you don't have all districts or all charters using this, what are you hoping to do with the information? And then the second part of the question is your second bullet point, we continue to use these funds to support. Can you tell me how much money we're talking about with those dollars?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Certainly, Representative. So the dollars has been $281,000 for, I think, as long as I've been at MDE. So it's not a large amount of money to do something to get to the intent of, you know, doing a kindergarten entry assessment. So the what we're using those dollars with is because we don't have any districts volunteering to do the assessment at the beginning of kindergarten, we're focusing on those districts who have embedded it as a component of their pre-K program, their voluntary pre-K program. So we're getting better data. It's certainly not, you know, a universal set because there's a finite number of voluntary pre-K programs, but we are using the data to look at the domains of learning from the early childhood indicators of process. We're also collecting programmatic data. And so we have developed a Tableau tool where once the data is submitted to us, we can turn around and produce a Tableau report back to the school, back to the classroom teacher that actually helps them inform their instructional practice. It helps the school decide on professional learning needs and potential priority setting for any support that needs to go to any learning area.
Representative Damath, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So,
please.
Thank you, Ms. Burnham. And it looks like because you have no district or charters that are actually volunteering, the dollars are really just being used to assess the programs that are already in effect, if I understand the answer correctly.
Commissioner?
Thank you, Chair. Correct.
Representative Damath.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And maybe, Commissioner, you can remind me, or maybe to have Ms. Mott, but I had recalled that there was a move from the funding from last spring to have to be able to expand, but eventually we would want to have the kindergarten entry profile. At least some of us would hope to have it be something that is used in a large number of districts and be able to actually assess the preparation, the work for children who've gone through different early learning programs. Can you just remind me, maybe you had said this earlier, Commissioner on Colleges, but just remind me kind of what the status is of that longer term hope.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Well, we continue to include this in proposals each year or each legislative session. And as long as the kindergarten entry assessment as currently written remains voluntary, it really doesn't provide us any authority to require it from districts. And so what's happened over the last couple of years is we've developed this system with our voluntary pre-K and school readiness programs that has really allowed kind of a two-way support structure where they give us the data, we can see how the impact of the program and the funding, and then they receive the data to analyze the impact of their instruction and professional learning opportunities. So we're really looking at, again, this year, it will be included in our pre-K proposal to continue to offer the kindergarten entry profile to our pre-K programming.
Okay, thank you, that's helpful. And so please continue with what are your final slides.
Just a couple left, thank you, Chair Pinto. Just an update that we did increase the scholarship cap for priority populations, and you can see on this slide what those increases were, as well as did a increase of $1,000 to all scholarships. Next slide. And just a quick reminder that the work continues with the preschool development grant, and it has been just a terrific opportunity to build those partnerships between other state agencies. And the grant activities, of course, are all based on community engagement with over 1,000 families and providers statewide. Multiple agencies have been working together to get the activities implemented. And those main activities of the preschool development grant include the community resource hubs, who have referred over 1,000 families to services in just 2021. Community solutions for healthy child development grants were awarded to 23 community-based organizations who are leading work on dental prep services, parent leadership, doulas, and additional efforts for children and families. And then, of course, the Help Me Connect, an online navigator to support pregnant and parenting families to find services in their area, has welcomed 29,000 unique visitors since it launched and helps families connect to housing, food, financial assistance, and childcare. We had an expansion of the infant and early childhood mental health consultation in schools and with child welfare workers. And there is support for growing the early childhood workforce, which is in process of implementation, such as a Grow Your Own for early childhood teachers and child development associates credentials in high school. So those are just a few things that is happening right now in the preschool development grant. And with that, we'll close with MDE's slides.
Thank you so much. I'm recalling members are just sort of noticing that a number of the things that the commissioner is talking about were decisions made by the agency after we closed our business at the end of June. And so this is really helpful updates, Commissioner, to kind of catch us up. Representative Pryor has a question, and then we'll need to move on to the other agencies. Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, that also helps clarify it for me, too. So on the slide before is my first question, just real quick, the ability to increase the grants early childhood scholarships. So was that, is that going to be ongoing? And was it tied to any federal funding or not?
Commissioner, can you just clarify for us?
Thank you, Chair. Vice Chair, it seems to be an ongoing conversation. So there is a continuing interest to look at increasing the scholarship cap to ensure it gets to the point where it includes full cost of care. Because what we don't want to happen is, you know, our priority children getting a scholarship and then having it end abruptly because the scholarship ran out and, the family is still very much in need. So we are continuing those conversations and looking at that as we move forward.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Assistant Commissioner Burnham. I'll practice that to make sure I get that name right. And then also on the next slide, looking at that the development grant. So where do we stand? And I think as I recall that is a federal grant that Minnesota received. Okay, I see the nod. Yes. And then where are we on that grant? We must have gotten some additional money than the first grant round. Is that, or is this still the same grant round?
Can you clarify, Commissioner? I seem to recall there was a grant awarded, and then I think that we got a second grant. But Commissioner, can you clarify?
That is correct, Chair Pinto. This is our second grant, and I would have to confirm the end date. There are so many different end dates with all this federal funding, but I have heard and from my staff that they've expect an extension year to get the money spent out, mainly due to the pandemic. So we hope to continue the great work that's been started through this grant.
Yes.
President Pryor, anything quick? We should
quick, and it is great work. And so glad to hear that we'll be able to extend it.
Well, it's not confirmed, but we hope to.
Representative Pryor, thank you. And Commissioner, thank you so much to you and your team for all of your hard work. This is actually a really nice that was a very nice transition slide and conversation to our next speaker, who is with Minnesota Management and Budget. Ms. Hoganson, if you can introduce yourself and then proceed. And again, the preschool development grant, I think it's a nice connection with our children's cabinet, which is helping to coordinate all that work. So, Ms. Hoganson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Stephanie Hoganson, and I am the Policy Director for the Children's Cabinet, which is housed at Minnesota Management and Budget. And I'm here today to provide a brief overview and update of the 2021 legislation and appropriation to MMB for two items, the Early Childhood Governance Report and the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Task Force. The Children's Cabinet is overseeing the report and the task force. So first I'll talk about the governance report. The Children's Cabinet was directed in the 2021 HHS Omnibus Bill to execute a report on the governance of programs related to early childhood care and development. And per the statutes, the report findings had to be determined based on community engagement as outlined in the legislation, and specifically the legislation requested the report to address the impact of consolidation on five areas. So state efforts to ensure all children are kindergarten ready, coordination and alignment among programs, and the effort required of families to receive services to which they're entitled. The effort required of service providers to participate in early childhood programs, and the articulation between early care and education programs and the K-12 system. $200,000 was allocated for the completion of the report, and that was done through a transfer of American Rescue Plan Act, CCDBG funds from DHS to MMB. And to execute the report, the Children's Cabinet contracted with the Management Analysis Division, or MAD, at MMB. And they did the research, community engagement, and the report writing. And the MAD's report was delivered to legislative committees, including this one, with jurisdiction over early childhood programs by the February 1st deadline that was in statute.
I'm just going to note for Ms. Hoganson, for members, that so we received that report just on Tuesday. I'm virtually certain that it was sent out to all of you. If not, I'm almost positive it was. And what I've asked, the plan to do is to have a separate hearing where we will, after we've all had a chance to digest the report a bit, hear the presentation on the report and kind of have a broader discussion about early childhood governance. So I've asked MMB to just give us a reminder about what the status is. But the plan is to have a more full conversation at another time. I'd say probably in a few weeks, and we're still working that out. So, so please, Ms. Hoganson, can move on then to the Great Start Task Force.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So next, I'll provide an overview of the Great Start for All Minnesota Children Task Force. The task force was established to develop a state plan and implementation timeline, ensuring that all families have access to high-quality early care and education that enriches, nurtures, and supports children and their families. MMB was tasked with administration of the task force, and the Children's Cabinet is leading that work. And as part of that charge, the task force is working to meet the following goals. So affordability by ensuring family costs for early care and education, or ECE, are affordable. Accessibility by ensuring that a child's access to high-quality ECE is not determined by the child's race, family income, or zip code, and a supported ECE workforce by ensuring Minnesota's ECE educators in all types of settings are qualified, diverse, supported, and equitably compensated. And so as outlined in the statute, a draft plan and implementation timeline must start in July 2025 and finish no later than July 2031. And to meet this charge, the interim report is due to the governor and jurisdictional legislative committees by December 15, 2022, and final versions are due by February 1st, 2023. And $858,000 was allocated, again, through a transfer of ARP CCDBG funds from DHS to MMB for task force operations, and this amount includes costs for certain agency staff required by statute to participate in the task force to provide data and information.
And I should note that this was a proposal from Representative Bolden, who serves on the task force. I believe that she is the House representative, but perhaps there's another member as well. My apologies if I'm missing that. I know Representative Bolden is on the task force. So please continue, Ms. Hoganson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Bolden is appointed to the task force. Update on kind of the work that we've done to start up the task force, MMB has, following an RFP, we hired a contractor to provide meeting facilitation and plan development. We hired a task force coordinator to provide administrative, consultative, and coordinate program support for the task force. And then the full task force meets virtually each month. We had our first meeting on November 30th, each meeting works to address the charge and goals provided in statute. And per statute, the meetings are subject to open meeting law and are live streamed for public viewing. And there are, as prescribed in statute, there are 15 voting and 22 non-voting member positions, and three voting members serve as co-chairs. And as I mentioned, the first meeting was November 30th, and there have been three total meetings. And since in those meetings, the task force has identified guiding principles and are committed to grounding their work in local and national research, analysis and modeling, analyzing existing recommendations in previous working groups and task force, and stakeholder feedback. And two working groups of the task force have been established and will start to meet monthly beginning this month. And they'll take directions from the full task force and do some research analysis and bring proposals back to the full task force regarding key topics. And those two working groups are one on workforce compensation and supports working group, and then the parent and provider affordability working group. And noted here, the task force we maintain a website where there's slides, meeting minutes, and notice of future meetings for reference for the public and members. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Chair, and happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hoganson. And I should note, I believe that that there will be or scheduled to be a House GOP appointee to the task force as well. And so we'll certainly recognize that person when appointed. I gather that has not happened yet. So the opportunity is available, members, I think, to go for that if you're interested. And it's a pretty exciting task force to be a part of. I'm just looking to see if there are any questions the members have. And not seeing any. And Ms. Hoganson, you and your team at Children's Cabinet have been working just incredibly hard the last 2 years, as the other folks have presented to us. And so you have our great thanks in pulling these pieces together and many, many, many other things. So thank you so much, and thanks for being with us today. Not seeing hands raised, and so we're going to our final agency presentation then to catch us up, which is the Department of Employment Economic Development. Sir, if you can introduce yourself then proceed.
Yeah, great. Ariel, do you want to kick us off or do you want me to just jump right in?
Why don't you introduce yourself, Brandon, great. And then I'll get the slides up. Yep.
Awesome. Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Brandon Toner, Director of the Office of Small Business Partnerships here at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. We have a broad array of programs, and one of those is what we call the Child Care Economic Development Grant Program, and I'm here to present on that to you all today. And we'll just jump right into it.
Yep, please do.
And then next slide, please, Dario. And so this is the what we call the Child Care Economic Development Grant Program, so we don't confuse folks, but this is a relatively modest but impactful program that delivers funds to local communities to increase the quality of child care providers to support economic development across Minnesota and within their communities. I emphasize that this is a really flexible tool that we allow communities to respond to us about what they need to use these funds for to innovate solutions to their child care issues in their community. And we've learned some things about what works well and what doesn't work so well, but the funds can be used for childcare business startups and expansion, training, facility modifications. A new use in this latest iteration is direct subsidies to incentivize or retain employees, which we know is a high need. Improvements required for licensing, assistance with licensing, and other regulatory requirements. And then, of course, we prioritize based on documented shortages of childcare providers in their areas. There's a couple requirements with this program that 50% of the funding goes to Greater Minnesota and 50% of the funding, of course, or at least 50% of the funding in Greater Minnesota. And usually we see anywhere between 50 to 70% of the funds going to Greater Minnesota, where frankly, the need is the most acute for actual facilities and providers. Next slide, please. And then, so this program started out as a pilot program in 2017, exclusively to Greater Minnesota, and then was funded on and off between 2018 and 2021. There was no funding in 2019 and 2021. Relatively modest and targeted program. And then what we saw in 2022 is a larger investment and a sustaining investment in this program, kind of bringing it out of the pilot stage and providing a horizon that communities could aim for. Even if they weren't ready for this round, they could look forward to the next round. And so that's been a great advantage for communities that are interested in this funding to have that predictability in future funding. So we'll have, we've launched the FY22 RFP in September and are now in the process of, we've made award decisions and are in the process of executing contracts. We're almost 90% through that process, and we'll start to see these dollars go to work pretty soon here.
Mr. Toner, so is the $2.5 million then ongoing? Is that what you're saying? I mean, does it continue in future years or?
Yeah, it's been funded at least for the biennium for 22 and 23. Okay. And if I recall, it's funded at $1.5 million. Dariel, please jump in. Correct me.
If you can please introduce yourself, Ms. Dannon, and if you can just clarify that.
Yeah.
Get you unmuted, perhaps. I'm not hearing you. I'm looking for you on my screen here. Oops. We can.
Oop, apologies.
There we go.
You know, I think managing the slides and also unmuting myself is a technology perhaps slightly beyond my capabilities at the moment. Apologies for that.
True for many of us. Yeah, no problem.
Correct. I'll introduce myself for the record. My name is Darielle Dannon. I'm the Government Relations Director at DEED, and my colleague Brandon Toner is absolutely correct. The committee in its did put funding for this program in the tails. So we are, as he said, I think one of the things that we all acknowledged, sorry, that I believe was me, but one of the things that we did notice kind of having run this on a pilot basis and was part of the conversation as we created that omnibus bill last legislative session is exactly what Mr. Toner said, is that when communities can plan for, perhaps they don't have a project together yet, but they can think about a project in the future and make a plan, that's really helpful. And we consider that to be, we talk about that for many of our programs, that's a pipeline, and it's very important. And so this will provide us with that pipeline of funding into the future, and then communities can, you know, if they apply for this round, don't get it, apply for next round and don't receive funding, they can try again. And, you know, our team also does a great job of following up with communities if they aren't funded to provide them with feedback on, you know, what could be enhanced on that proposal.
Yeah, we find that.
Thank you. Mr. Toner. Yep.
Yeah, just tagging on to those comments that we find that, you know, this funding being available coupled with the planning dollars that we'll talk about later through the initiative foundations really positions communities as an excuse to pull partners together, knock on some doors that they wouldn't otherwise have an excuse to knock on, to generate resources and partnerships to deliver childcare solutions for their community. So we really, really like having that ongoing funding so folks can organize around that for those solutions. So
thank you. Please continue. Yeah, we're going to see if Ms. Dannon can get the presentation back.
We'll test my technology capabilities. All right, I'm going to mute myself and we'll get back.
Okay. So, yeah, I just want to briefly talk about program outcomes. And so, you know, we're seeing some really good leverage of these funds. Like I said, we're freeing up resources at the local level with just having a relatively modest amount of funding on the table, where community partners can, you know, draw from the private sector, private employers, local foundations, community foundations to deliver resources to actually invest in increasing the childcare supply. And for 2022, we're projecting to see the creation of 2,321 childcare slots across 14 funded projects. I just want a subtle detail about projects funded. Those are grants to organizations. In the end, a lot of those grants are then going to fund actual providers. So we may see, you know, for example, the Northland Foundation is one of our grantees. They'll fund a dozen projects within their region at, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 per project to expand or build out new childcare centers in their area. So I just want to emphasize that subtlety. And of course, 2023, we will see another $2.5 million available, and we expect to see similar numbers for that when that RFP goes out sometime this summer and is awarded later on the summer, early fall. So that's that program. And then complementary to this program is a special appropriation, or what we call legislative mandated appropriation, to our six initiative foundations covering Greater Minnesota. And this funding is primarily for assisting communities with their planning efforts. For example, our initiative partners will partner with their local Child Care Aware to do some educational promotion to defray some of the costs and lower the cost for education for providers. They'll assist communities with documenting their shortages and prepping for potentially their proposal to us for the Child Care Economic Development Grant Program. So that's a really flexible tool, primarily focused on technical assistance to providers and assistance to communities in their planning efforts to address their shortages. And we've, because of the increase in funding, we saw an opportunity to make sure that funding was a or was available sensitive to the size of these regions. We have significantly what we call like large MIF regions and smaller MIF regions. So we set a floor to make sure that funding was stable from previous years, but then expanded funding for the larger initiative foundation region so that they could reach more communities within those areas where there's higher population.
Mr. Turner, can you just remind me, so this is separate state funding from the prior slide, the child care grant funding. Okay.
Yep, the child care grant funding is a competitive RFP, and then this is a direct grant to these organizations to assist their communities.
But can I ask, but then the next stage is it's a direct appropriation to the MIFs, but then they probably use some sort of process to then allocate the money out to projects in their communities.
It's an important distinction there is that the funding to the MIFs directly cannot be used for direct grants to projects and partners. It's more of a planning grant where they're providing either technical assistance to providers. For example, they'll contract with First Children's Finance to, you know, provide assistance to a provider to do business planning activities or expansion activities. So far, our understanding of the law is that they can't make direct grants for example, the same uses as the Child Care Economic Development Grant Program. And of course,
thank you.
And then Dario, that is all I have for those two programs, and then I can dive into any number of details.
Thank you much. And of course, members, these programs are not under our jurisdiction directly, but obviously have a great interest. And I a few more shout outs just to Chair Noor, who really was pushing for these programs, I know, in negotiations with the Senate in the spring. And I think, and as you can see, they've had a great benefit all around the state, which is terrific. So just looking to see any hands and not seeing any. So thank you so much to our colleagues at DDEC. Sir, there is just one hand up. Representative Wasilek, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As soon as you ask, I put my hand up and it's like right at that time. So I just wanted to follow up. I haven't really followed these grants in the past because I think, there hasn't always been a ton of funding attached to them. But I'm wondering if there's any sort of report back to DEED on like what sort of activities and things are funded. I think it would be really interesting to see like what the money, what specifically the funds are being used for, whichever program it is, whether it's the child care grants or the money.
Absolutely,
Mr. Toner.
Yeah, thank you for the question, Representative. We'll be reporting back on the use of funds and the impact. And the other thing I'd like to note too is we've been working with DHS with coordinating this RFP itself, its funding, and then we're actually pulling the coordination group together because a lot of us are between DHS and ourselves funding this child care supply increase. We want to make sure the partners are around the table and we're measuring the same things, we're pulling in the same direction, and that our various funding sources are complementing each other. So there's certain things that our funding can do that DHS's funding can't do. And so we are in constant conversations about how we position those RFPs and then report back on that. And we're actually going to be meeting with our colleagues at MMB Impact Evaluation Unit to see how can we target their efforts towards looking at, are we delivering the impact that we're hoping to in terms of the increasing the child care supply? So we'll definitely have more to report back on that later.
Thank you, Mr. Toner. And if you can make sure, I guess this is directed to Ms. Nannan, to send us that information as you have it. Sometimes things, there can be the different jurisdictional silos. And so it maybe goes to Jobs and Workforce Development on our committee. And so if you can just get us that information, I know folks would be interested to see the impact around the state.
Happy to do that, Chair. And I'll just note for members of the committee that on our website, we do have all the legislatively mandated reports that we've put out. So we have a number of them on childcare. I might actually send to your CA kind of the link to that. And so the prior reports,
please.
You can find the past ones as well. Yeah, but we're happy to make sure the committee gets this.
That'd be terrific. Thank you so much. That is great. Not seeing other hands up, thank you so much, Ms. Dan and Mr. Toner. And actually, as I was watching the presentation, I was thinking about our hearing on Tuesday, which will be a joint hearing with the Jobs and Workforce Development Committee, and talking about the ways in which childcare and early learning are a critical foundation for our economy and the impact of shortages and and kind of what the dynamics are. And so this is a really nice transition to that, which is our next hearing. So members, just to remind you, no hearing on Tuesday morning, so you get that morning free. Then 5:30 on Tuesday, we'll be at the Masonic Institute for the Developing Brain. Again, folks are welcome to join via hybrid or virtually. I believe that our CA, Ms. Breck, has everybody's information of whether you're coming or not. If that were to change, let us know. And then we will have our regular hearing next Thursday, and then tentative plan is to have a hearing on Friday at 10:30. And so please hold that slot, and we'll be getting information out about that very soon. Folks, let me know if you have questions otherwise. I believe I don't see any hands up, and so we're giving you a couple minutes back to your morning. Thanks so much to everyone, and especially our agency presenters in the last couple of days, and we'll see you at 5:30 next Tuesday, and with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thanks so much.